usually we say good, fine, you know, it's because I think below all this we are living the good life. And it's important to know how to live that good life. We're going to talk about today how to live the good life. We're going to a book of Proverbs. I think I've got a page number for you there. Yeah, 462, if you are the note taker or the read along kind of person, I encourage you to do that. But Proverbs, it's a book of advice, really. And it's funny how advice comes in different forms throughout the Bible. There's a book of Deuteronomy, which is essentially Moses' advice to all of his people, like a sort of a parting thing. You know, if I have any wisdom to give you, let me give you this. And in that particular book, Moses says, you have before you good and evil, you know, blessings and curses. Choose good. Choose life. Choose the good life. He doesn't say that exactly, but that's his message for everybody. And that's what this whole series is supposed to be about, is how to choose the good life. And we're going to begin today by looking at someone who really embodies the good life. You guys recognize him, right? He is, in fact, the most interesting man in the world. If you don't know about him, let me tell you a little thing or two about him. Superman has pajamas with his logo on them. He won the World Series of Poker with only a pair of Uno cards. If opportunity knocks and he isn't home, opportunity waits. His organ donor card includes his beard. If he were to pat you on the back, you would list it on your resume. If he called you by the wrong name, you would feel compelled to change it. He's a lover, not a fighter. But he's also a fighter, so don't get any ideas. He is the most interesting man in the world. You guys know who I'm talking about, surely. Usually you're a little more laughy with, it's okay to laugh. It's all right, yeah. My goodness. This was, they ended up getting rid of him, or he actually got tired of doing these things, but it was an incredibly successful campaign. I mean, he made me want to buy Dos Equis, you know, Mexican beer. It's just not that good. So it was an incredibly successful campaign. And I think maybe, you know, among the other things, the fact that it was just kind of funny, all the incredible things that he could do. One of the things that really sort of resonated, I think, with people is he had no weaknesses, right? There's nothing this guy couldn't do and couldn't do amazingly well. He's always surrounded, you know, beautiful women and people are bringing him things and, you know, just the absolute lap of luxury, because there's nothing that he couldn't do. And that is far, far afield from reality. Because we all know at some level, I think we all know that no matter what you can do, it means there's something else you can't do. There was a guy named Norman Vincent Peale who came out with these strength finder things, or a bunch of these business kind of things that were put forward several years ago. And what it brought out, I think maybe what it did most of all, was burst the bubble of the well-rounded person. The person with no real weaknesses, where before that, I think everybody was compelled to try and work on their weaknesses instead of working on their strength and just accepting that they're going to have weaknesses. So there's all kinds of personality tests, and I have this one up here on the board. I'd like each of you to kind of take a peek. You have different, a bunch of cluttered stuff, I think, to the casual observer, but just take a look at each of these. And tell yourself, you could nudge your neighbor if you want to do it quietly. Don't start talking too much to yourself. Which of these do you really identify with most? Yeah, take a moment. Just look around. Don't shake your head. I know there's something there that you'll think, oh, yeah, that's me. You can do it this other way also, and that's the cards on the back. I've got these. I could share them. And see if, now that you look at this, if you've chosen one of these four quadrants, see if the pictures corresponded. That's why I like to do it this way. The pictures tend to correspond. I don't know how they did it, but they tend to correspond with the different personality types. And there's probably more than four different personalities. But the amazing thing here is all of us will primarily identify with one of these four colors. And probably most of you already have as well. And I'm not telling you, I'm orange. I'm not telling you that that's better. even though it is, better than any of the rest of your personality types. But the truth is, each one of these has strengths, and guess what? It has weaknesses as well. Blue is a connectivity, a relationship kind of person. And guess what all organizations need? They need people who make peace, who get along with other people. Every organization needs this. But the people who are mainly focused on this can have a hard time hurting people's feelings and doing some of the things that organizations absolutely have to do. So while they have great strengths, they also have weaknesses. Orange, we're the creative type, we're the daring type, we're the types who embrace change. If there is an emergency, follow the orange people. They're at home in that kind of chaos. But guess what we're not necessarily good at? We're not necessarily the people who make those connections and take care of people. We're not necessarily patient people. We're not necessarily even dependable people. Do organizations need these kinds of people? Of course they do. Green is a scientific kind of people who like data. They like spreadsheets. Do spreadsheets have an important function in every single organization? You bet they do. But these are people who sometimes are hard to please, sometimes are very meticulous in a way that alienates them from other people. Do organizations need them? Absolutely they do. But organizations can't be made up of only them because their weaknesses aren't offset with someone else's strengths. Gold are the people who are loyal. Is loyalty important? Absolutely. Dependability, driven, slow to adapt to change. Again, every single one of these characteristics have strengths and they have weaknesses as well. But these are personality traits that I've been talking about. And the self-professed message here today is not talking about personality traits, even though I would suggest that whatever trait you have been given, whichever one of these you fall into, is a gift from God. But the real point of this message is, do these gifts, do these blessings that God gives you also have weaknesses? Can blessings become weaknesses? Is that a trick question? We know this, right? So especially if you're parents out there. Can you bless your children so much that it starts to hurt them? Starts to cripple them? This is the amazing thing to me when I see people who are really fairly well off and their children aren't spoiled rotten. I mean, good job, people. When you have the means to really bless your children and you don't do it to the degree that it actually hurts, that's not easy to do. And if you think about that, there is literally, literally nothing that God cannot give you. Anything you wanted, anything that you prayed for, anything that you asked God for, you know what? He can give it to you. You can't say that about anybody else. There's things that parents, I don't care how rich you are, can't give their children. But guess what? God can. He could give you anything you could possibly want. So why doesn't He? I mean, what gives, God? How come you don't do that? I think part of the reason is He knows that ultimately, if He did, it would hurt you. And we find that as we look at today's reading. We're going to go to the book of Proverbs, as some of you will know, and that's not going to be up there, so you're just going to have to follow it in here. We're going to go to Keys of Balance next. Don't go ahead. This is a little plug for being a PowerPoint flipper. It's going to be chaotic sometimes, but it's very exciting. That's the good, the dark side, and the light side of that. So instead, turn to your Bibles, because sometimes Pastor Mike forgets to paste in the the text. Now, those of you who know already know the that Proverbs are from Solomon will say, okay, so this is going to be about giving too much and too much blessing. If there's anybody who doesn't know anything about a sweet spot between too little and too much, it would be Solomon, right? What does he know about the dark side of too much? Well, actually, he does know a little something. I mean, he got to experience what too much really is. But at the very end of the book of Proverbs, you'll see at verse 30, we get some wisdom from some other people. This is actually beginning with chapter 30. There's a man named Agur who doesn't have Solomon's resources. He lives a life that's probably a little more like what you and I live. So he begins in this way in verse 7. It says, "Two things I ask of you," speaking to God. "Deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying." Understandable. You don't want lies either from yourself or the people around you to be lying. And here's key. "Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God." Don't give me too much, but don't give me too little. Is it hard for us to imagine not asking for too much? I mean, wouldn't too much really just solve all of our problems? I mean, you think maybe it would, but if you look around, it's not too hard to see that that's not the case at all. I think we have a congregation of more, how do I say this, more Seattle Seahawks fans than football fans. So you know a little bit about football, but it's more about knowing the Seahawks. So the chances are, though, you've still heard about a team in Southern California, the San Diego Chargers, except for they're no longer the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers have moved north to Los Angeles. And why did they move north? Because the owner wanted a new stadium. They wanted a new stadium for like 15 years. But he didn't want to pay for a new stadium. What he wanted was for the city of San Diego essentially to buy him a new stadium. He's a billionaire, people. And yet he doesn't want to buy his own stadium. And I'm not coming down too hard on him. It's kind of how business goes. Dean Spanos is just a businessman. But what you might not have been aware of is the NFL, as an organization, was willing to pay $300 million toward a new stadium. So he's not paying for that, obviously, but he's not even willing to pay the rest of that. How much? I mean, really, how much is enough? I'd suggest to you that it's never going to be enough unless you start to embrace what the writer of Proverbs, the Agur guy who wrote this balance kind of request from God. "Don't give me too much, lest I profane the name of God and say, 'Who is he?' But don't give me too little, where I have to steal for my daily bread." Is there happiness in just a little? Yeah, I mentioned in the newsletter this week, I was raised in a trailer. If you've never lived in a trailer, they rock in the wind. You know, they're small things to live in. And I thought at that time, imagine this, I thought that the people who lived in the double-wide trailers really had it made. You know, that is living. I can remember learning about in school about the different classes, upper class, lower class, middle class, and then the, you know, breakdowns between those. And I remember coming home to my mom and saying, "So we're like upper middle class?" And she laughed at me. So I was like, "Yeah, upper lower class, maybe." And I was stunned by that because I thought we had it going on. I was completely content in that lifestyle. Admittedly, I looked with jealousy toward the double-wide people. But ultimately, I was happy like that. We've been able to give our kids a lot more than I had as a kid. I wasn't impoverished. But at the same time, I look at my kids' childhood and I look at my childhood, and I don't think that they're any happier than I was, even though they have received more. So the key to happiness can't possibly be in just simply having more. So what is it? What is the key to balance and staying away from this dark side of blessing? Well, the first thing that, thank you for holding off on that for so long. The first thing is, I think, daily living. And by that, I mean asking for in this day the things that we need for that day. You may find something that's a little bit familiar in the Lord's Prayer with that, but we blow past it and we may not think too much about it. but that's there for a reason. Give us this day all the bread that we need for the rest of the week. No, give us today what we need today, and don't worry too much about tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of itself. We will have that to worry about later. You know, the best thing that I liked as I was promoted, we all want to be our own boss, ultimately. Some of us are our own bosses. But it's that power to not have to be dependent on someone else, isn't it? Having to pray to God each day to give us our daily bread and keep that relationship of dependence active. The thing that I liked about being promoted wasn't that I get to be more powerful and in charge of more things. The thing that I liked in the military about being promoted is there's less people now who can tell me what to do. I didn't have to walk around wondering if I needed to ditch somebody. I had less authority and less people that I needed to answer to. That was the joy of it, because I didn't like to be dependent or subject to anybody. And there's something that really rubs us the wrong way. There's something that we fight against in this relationship of dependence. Think about the Israelites living in the desert in the Sinai for 40 years, and every day, how much did they get? Only enough for that day. That's a hard lesson in dependence. But there's peace in that. There's joy in that sweet spot where we are given each day exactly what we need, not too much and not too little. The second thing is to enjoy the small things. And that is not to say that you can't dream big, but there is real happiness and there is real contentment in enjoying small things. I heard an astronaut talking one time, and he talked about setting goals. Now, there's not much bigger goal or a much bigger goal than becoming an astronaut, right? Very many of us thought when we were in kindergarten, I want to go to the moon, I want to become an astronaut. And the vast majority of us gave up on that pretty quick. Or at least when we started to find out how very few people are selected for that kind of goal or for that kind of mission. What he talked about, he never obviously gave up on it. And when he achieved it, he said that if you set only the very tip-top thing as a goal, guess what? That's short-lived. In fact, it's not even repeatable. And what happens to the rest of your life when you've done that one thing? You're not going to the moon again. You're not going to space again. So what he said the key to happiness was to make a lot of little goals along the way and find contentment and achievement in doing all kinds of little things, either that help you to achieve your big goal or that help you to achieve whatever your next thing is. But to take pleasure in each little thing as you go along and to enjoy all the little things as well. I feel compelled to throw in work hard, because there is joy to be found in hard work. You know, there's sometimes a misunderstanding even of the monk lifestyle, that Zen Buddhist lifestyle of just being dependent on others and just begging for your living. Obviously, society can't support everybody out with their bowl wanting you to dump rice in it. And I think that the thing that they are missing very often is the joy that comes from work. We don't have to work just in order to achieve all of these goals, all of these possessions that we're looking for. But work itself is its own blessing. My old pastor, my mentor, Steve Hauer, used to say that God does not give us people to get work done. He gives us work to get people done. There's a formational thing that happens. There's gifts and there's blessings just in doing work. So the writer of Ecclesiastes says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, with all of your strength. Put yourself into your work as if you're working for God. Number four, it sounds silly, sounds like one of these self-affirmation mantras, but choose happiness. That's actually a choice. Did you know that was a choice? Is there A, B, C, all of the above? That is actually an option. And how we respond to things is legitimately a choice that each and every one of us has. And choosing to be happy. Choosing how we're going to react to things is transformational in the way that we experience life, that we show other people the walk of faith, that our relationship with God helps us to do this. The final thing, learn the secret. Well, what's the secret? The secret is in Philippians 4, 11 through 13, where Paul tells us, "Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned whatever situation I am to be content." Right? Now we know this. "I know how to be brought low and how to abound in every other circumstance. I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Now, all of us know that very last line, but we forget all the stuff that comes beforehand. I was trying to count them up a little while ago. I done like 10 marathons and a whole bunch of triathlons, and I don't think I ever ran a race where somebody didn't have that verse written somewhere on their t-shirt or their body or something. "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." But it never actually meant the thing that they thought it meant, you know. It was this mantra that people told themselves, "I can do anything through Christ who strengthens me. I can wrestle a bear. I can get in a boxing match with a kangaroo. I can run 100 marathons. I can do all these things because Jesus gives me superpowers." And that's not what it means. It's important to follow what Paul said right beforehand. I can be in abundance, or I can be in need. And I can be happy. I can be content. Because the secret is in Jesus Christ, who gives me all that I need, who died so that I could be reconciled with my Father in heaven. And that gives me serenity. It gives me contentment. And if you don't have that, you don't have peace. Just like that that bumper sticker says, right? No Jesus, N-O Jesus, N-O peace, K-N-O-W Jesus, K-N-O-W peace. That's where it has to come from. Now, I won't ask if there's anybody who's ever attended an AA meeting, but I will say that they are on to something. They have something called the Serenity Prayer that is based and built on Christianity. Because if you don't have a Christian foundation, your chances for getting better, I don't know how you're going to do it. I know people stay married for a really long time, but if they're not based on Christian marriages, I don't know how they do it. I know Jesus, and so that's the only thing that I ultimately get to share with all of you. They have a prayer called the Serenity Prayer that is, I think, a powerful thing, and you don't have to become an alcoholic to get the power from this. So I'm going to encourage you, I'm going to encourage all of us to say this prayer together, to think about what it means. And you may want to take it with you as well. But we're going to close today with this prayer. So I'm going to ask you to say this along with me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as a pathway to peace, taking, as He did, this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that He will make all things right if I surrender to His will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with Him forever and ever in the next. Amen.